Yeah, about 20. You getting warm? Getting warm. Okay, here's a few indications. Emotional coldness towards the other. Lack of compassion towards the other. Focusing on what's wrong in the relationship. List keeping of wrong done. Lack of forgiveness. Constant disunity in relationship. Seeking affirmations of love in other relationships or friendships. In other words, going to children or aunts and uncles or something for relationship. Unwilling to admit wrong, much less take responsibility. Waiting for the other to repent before you do. You go first. Trying to escape from relating through job, work, TV, books, children, etc. Trying to persuade others just how bad you have it. Pulling away from the Lord. After all, look what he did to you in giving you the spouse. You know, why didn't he protect me? So there's kind of an underground anger towards him. A fear that your repentance will result in strengthening the spouse's position or your spouse's habits. Okay. Continued on. Expecting your spouse to change even though you can't change what you know you need to change about yourself. Do I need to read that one again? Did you get that? Open aggression towards one another. Passive style aggression towards one another. You can have either one of those. Hiding money or resources from spouse for when it happens. Feelings of bitterness towards spouse. Holding spouse to a higher standard than you're willing to be held to. Giving or taking too much responsibility for the relationship. And hiding or neglecting to mention details which would weaken your case in a counseling situation. So those are just some things as I've thought through that would probably be indicative of the furnace. Okay? Now the next question. What do you do if your spouse is unwilling to do anything, or can I enter the furnace alone? Do I need to answer that, or is that not important? Okay. The thing to remember is that the marriage furnace is connected to the journey to the inner self. See, that was the previous thing. Married or single, the Lord in his faithfulness and compassion will take you to the end of yourself, to the end of trusting your idols, etc. It is a lonesome journey, and often the intimacy of sharing your experiences with another is missing unless you have a good friend to share with. As you go through the process, remember that your spouse may or may not respond. In cases where there has been a separation, the roving spouse may attempt to come back since and if you keep your act together. Okay, the one that took off, now you're getting your act together, you're going through learning the lessons. They can see the newfound sense of peace in your life. Unless the reconciliation is more of a giving up of all rights for both parties, coming together in brokenness before the Lord, wait until there is brokenness. Now here's what I mean by that. Many times a spouse will go ahead and divorce or leave or separate. Then this person uses that and they continue right on through the furnace and the Lord gives them a real sense of peace. And their life in direction and stuff, and they're really trusting and abiding in him. And the other spouse off there playing the field, if you will, and they're separated. Then finally they think, they look pretty good now. So then they come back, and they come back and said, now if you continue behaving the way that you are and being that nice, then I'll come back. What I'm saying is, if you hear that statement, just smile and say, no, thank you. That's exactly right. I've seen it too many times. Now, that doesn't mean you're not willing to reconcile, but it says here, coming together in brokenness before the Lord. You're both broken. See, nobody demands nothing when you come back together. See what I'm saying? So neither spouse. See, I had one situation where the gal says, you know, okay, now if you go through this, she's the one that left and divorced him. Well, we'll get back together if. She was the one that was off catting around. Here she was making the conditions. It didn't work. never does. There's no, she's not the one who should be saying the ifs in the first place. In that case, in that scenario, shouldn't have been her. Probably should have been him. But he wasn't. He was willing to receive her unconditionally and work through the stuff. Well, unless both parties are that way, forget it. They're not ready yet. Don't hear me saying that the Lord doesn't want to reconcile them. They're just not ready. And so there has to be brokenness on both parts. Now, here's a few things you may not have thought about. Don't try to push your mate into the furnace. I know it's a temptation, but resist it. One tendency of the spouse who sees the marriage furnace in action is to push their mate into the furnace. A sort of you first mentality. Push them in there. Let's see if this thing really works.
But remember what happened to the ones that pushed Shaq into the furnace.
Good point. If you're not destroyed, then I'll follow you in. You know? Of course, you get destroyed doing it. The faith response, regardless of your mate's response, is to walk in faith. What do I mean by pushing your mate into the furnace? Nagging, being contrary, fighting, picking on, being moody, angry, bitter, all in all just pain, self-centered, with the attitude of, let's see how far my spouse can handle this, or how long they can handle this. Also giving you an excuse to feed the flesh. Right? Well, I'm just trying to really bring them to the end of themselves. Yeah. In short, purposely making life hell for your mate. A word of caution. Righteous living can make your mate's life living hell. Does that make sense? So sometimes, you know, a pastor once told me the two main reasons that pastors are asked to leave the church are flagrant sin and flagrant righteousness. That's the two main reasons. Jesus got crucified because he was righteous. So is it good to suffer for righteousness' sake? Well, yes, it is. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts, some of the new thoughts, which I hadn't really ever shared till this seminar about the marriage furnace. Okay, kind of got that. You understand that a little bit there? So if you look at this part, and when you come back to... And one of the things that I'm excited about, the Heavenly Discipleship Profile Test, had to look at the title because we've changed it recently. What I'm really excited about is the thing called the marriage burial. And in fact, Mike was contemplating writing a book called Bury Your Marriage, which I thought was a cute title. I'd like still like to see that. Anyway, it comes to a point that just like we're... our old selves are crucified with Christ. Our marriages, we need to bring our marriages and bury them and crucify them too. We need to start over with a new marriage, a Christ-centered marriage. And so why I'm excited about this process is because, or this booklet, is because it does, Mike goes and does a very good job of describing the process that a person goes through in coming to the end of their marriage and burying their marriage. And in fact, you'll find on, I believe it's B8, where he starts talking about the marriage spiral, where eventually you come just to a brick wall, and he shared a little bit about the marriage spiral at his basic this time, is you'll find, then what do you do to bury your marriage on this page? And so sometimes I've just taken this section, Xeroxed it, and handed it to a couple and given it to them and said, now, well, I want you to go home and work through this before we talk again. And so like the first is, begin to relate to your mate not on the basis of his or her behavior, but on the basis of his desire. Well, that would make a difference. Accept the burial of the old marriage. Determined to return every offense with love. See, there's some hard things here. And, you know, you share number three, determined to return every offense with love. You know, some guys will say, well, can't I just read a book? You know, give me a book to read on marriage or something. Let me go through something else. But do I have to love her if she's mean to me? I can't do that. I'll read a book. I'll go to a seminar. Whatever. Okay. You'll see these four, set a higher goal in marriage. which is to reveal self and destroy it. Make sure you submit to this work of God before you ask Him to relieve any pressure. Fifth, listen, realizing that another's happiness is not your responsibility. The Bible nowhere hints at the ability of one person to make life miserable. Happiness rests on our individual relationships with Christ. If it were any other way, God will lose His basic stronghold on us. Six, listen, you have been crucified with Christ and have a new life, His life. You need not be defensive. You can listen for the good of the other, for the one voice that counts the most. He has called us His beloved. Seventh, adjust your behavior where needed. Remember that no matter, and he goes and does some teaching. And eight, review your wedding vows. That's a good thing, isn't it? Review them, renew them. Maybe if you don't like the old ones, come up with some new ones. Okay? So you come to a point of burying your marriage. Now, as I have come to try to summarize a lot of what we've been doing, one of the things that I've seen is I bring it back to one of the scriptures, Matthew 22, 36 to 38. And if you would like, I have these on overheads, or not on handouts. I'll give these to Marcine and she can pass out. Pass those out. So if you look at Matthew 22, 36 to 38, a lawyer came to Jesus one day. This is not a lawyer joke, Turner. Or you know, one of those guys that studied the book of the law. And he said, you know, Jesus, I'm kind of a bottom line guy. This is my paraphrase, by the way. He said, Jesus, I'm kind of a bottom line guy. And would you mind telling me what the, you know, what's the most important thing of all? What's the first or foremost commandment? Jesus says, okay. I'll tell you what. Love God, love others, love yourself. He said, on that are all the law and the prophets based on loving God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Love others as you love yourself. So on this diagram, we have God, self, me, and others, His children, right? We're talking about believers. So as we look at some of Satan's game plan on trying to steal, kill, and destroy, what I have and what we've looked at is what God says about God. Right? Concept of God. Who God is. But we also have what feelings and past experience say about God based on our earthly authority figures. Okay? So that can be a conflict, can it? Within. With my feelings, I may feel that God doesn't love me, but the Word says God does love me. Okay? What about what God says about me, His child? But what I feel about me, what feelings and past experience say about me, what past experience say about others, spouses, and what God says about spouses. And basically what it comes down to then is a faith walk versus a sight walk. This right-hand column is walking by sight. The left-hand column is walking by faith. For we walk by faith, not by sight. 2 Corinthians 5:7. He said, now the Christian life then is a faith walk in truth. It's not a sight walk in lying emotions. And when you look at it then, and one thing that we like to do is then we fill in the individual's diagram. This would be a common one. So God is trustworthy, personal, caring, and loving over here. But God is, for this individual, hard to understand, not compassionate, will abandon you, reject you, not love you, so forth. As His child, I'm accepted, adequate, strong, free, wanted, forgiven, chosen, perfect in Him. Blameless, safe, confident, but I feel worthless, guilty, failure, unwanted. And then, of course, if I'm that way, then my believing husband or wife's that way too, with their new identity. But I may feel about them that they're irrational, incapable, have too high expectations, unrealistic, and all these other things. And I like to give this to an individual to say, now, in the days and months of ahead, what you're going to experience now are opportunities to choose where you're going to walk by faith, in what's truth or what's lying emotion.